Bhadram karne vishnu yama devaha Bhadram pashye macha bhirya jatraha Sthirai rangaihi stushtu vagam sas tanubihi Vyashema devahitayadayuhu Swasti na hindro vriddhashravaha Swasti nav pusha vishvavedaha Swasti nastarkshyo harishtanemihi Swasti no brahaspatir dadhatu Om shanti shanti shantihi.
Very good. So we have come to our last class on the current text, Mandukya Upanishad. I bet you never thought we could spend so much time talking about 12 verses, because that's all it is. One of the shortest Upanishads, a mere 12 verses long. We conclude today's class with the fourth pada, which we'll introduce with this verse, and also Omkara Upasana, meditation on Om. These are the final topics. Before we see this final mantra, let me just summarize the prior three verses. Thank you. The prior three verses together with this 12th verse, final verse, form a unit. And what the unit does is describe the Omkara Upasana meditation on Om. So we saw first an unfoldment of Ahkara, Ukara, and Makara. And then today we're going to see what's called Ahmatra. And I'll explain what that means in just a moment. When we saw three verses prior to this, Ahmatra, the Akara described the technical word Vaishvanara, which we said was Atma in the waking state. And let me use the Sanskrit by now, Jagrat. Avastha. And we said that Atma as Vaishvanara, Atma in waking state, is the one aware of the world along with the your own sthula sharira plus sukshma sharira. And karana sharira. Remember, karana sharira, the causal body, as it's known, is the cause for the other two. And we said the cause for the other two is ignorance. Karana sharira is a very fancy word. Ultimately, it means ignorance. Nothing more, nothing less. So all three of these, sthula sharira, sukshma sharira, karana sharira, are present in the waking state. All of this is symbolized by ahkara, by the matra ah. Then we saw ukara representing taijasa, which was atma in the dream state, swapna avastha. And we saw that in the dream state, there's no knowledge of the outside world. There's no knowledge even of your sthula sharira. In terms of your own experience, the world together with your physical body is absent from your experience. However, sukshma and karana sharira continue to be present for taijasa, atma in the swapna avastha. And then finally, and we saw these in the prior class, and the last we saw in a prior class was makara, which represents prajna. Prajna is our name for atma in the sleep state, in sushupti. And we observe that in Sushupti, Atma is present, but there is no experience of the world or your physical body, nor is there any experience of sukshma sharira, thoughts, dreams, emotions, etc. The only thing present in the sushupti avastha is karana, sharira, ignorance. But as we observed, ignorance is bliss, and the deep sleep experience is indeed a blissful experience. So this is what we saw in the prior class. We're going to now conclude this discussion, in fact, and conclude the whole text, with a discussion of this one. This one, in our text, is going to be called a matra. These are matras. A is a matra. Matra here would mean a letter. It doesn't always mean letter, but in this context, matra means letter. So we have the A matra, the letter A. We have the U matra, the letter U. We have the Ma matra, the letter Ma. And then we have the fourth, which is A matra, which is not a matra. It doesn't mean the letter A, like this. A matra means no matra. That's confusing, isn't it? This is a matra, this is also a matra, but the compounds, the words have different meanings. So this is the letter A, this is a non-letter, a matra here meaning a non-letter, a non-sound. Remember, we're doing a grammatical deconstruction of the mantra Om, A-U-Ma being the syllable Om, and Om is a sound. And as we've observed before, after you recite Om, before you recite the next Om, is an interval of silence. And that fourth pada, the amatra, represents, or I should put it the other way around, that silence in between repetitions of Om is what's representing this amatra, the absence of amatra, the non-letter. And this is where we're going to see the symbolism of that in this final mantra of the Upanishad. So let's return to our text. And I'm hoping that we'll have maybe 15, 20 minutes at the end of the program that we can actually go through briefly a Omkara Upasana, a meditation on Om. I'll show you many ways of doing it. We'll try one way. But let us see this final verse.
Amatraha chaturtaha, amatraha chaturtaha, avyavaharyaha prapanchopashamaha, avyavaharyaha prapanchopashamaha, shivaha advaitaha, shivaha advaitaha, evam hongkaraha atma eva, evam homkaraha atma heva samvishati atmana atmanam samvishati atmana atmanam yahevam veda yahevam veda.
Good. I'm breaking all the Sundays, and I probably should have been doing that from the very beginning. Nice to see the words more clearly, individually, by separating them. So, the chaturtaha padaha, the fourth pada, the turiya and chaturta are synonyms, they both mean the fourth. The fourth aspect of Om is amatraha, the one that doesn't have a letter, which means the silence that follows makara and precedes the a of the next om. So, all of this is for the sake of meditation. Everything we put up on the board is all symbolism, which we will employ in meditation. And this last verse is to give us more symbolism, in fact, the most important symbolism, because it applies to the ultimate goal of this whole exploration of Om. So that chaturtaha padaha, that fourth part of Om, which is amatraha, which is not a sound at all. In fact, it's silence. It is, we'll take the second word first, prapancha upashamaha. We saw this before when talking about chaturtapada earlier in the text. It comes once again here. The upashama, the cessation of prapancha. Prapancha can mean the world. In this case, prapancha means all experience. So, prapancha upashamaha, in the absence of all experience, in the absence of the experience of the world and your sthula sharira, in the absence of the experience of sukshma sharira, including your dreams, your thoughts, your emotions, even in the absence of the experience of blissful ignorance in deep sleep. We generally don't think of deep sleep as being an experience. We tend to think of it as being a non-experience. If it's a non-experience, why do we wake up and say, wow, what a great sleep I had? There seems to be, and there are many Vedantins argue for this. One could argue both ways. Many Vedantins argue that deep sleep includes a positive experience, that is, you're experiencing something. What is it that you're experiencing in deep sleep? Ignorance. Just like we said, in a dark closet, your eyes wide open, you're experiencing darkness. Of course, darkness is not a thing. In fact, it's not a very good metaphor to use, because darkness is not a thing. Ignorance is a thing, yet kinchit asti iti bhavam. It has some degree of existence. It's not an absence. Ignorance is not the absence of something. Ignorance is a something. And the reason we say ignorance is not an absence of something, can the absence of something obscure your knowledge of the rope? Go back to the rope snake. We said ignorance is dvi shakti mat, has two shaktis, two capacities. One is that avarana shakti, that covering capacity. The other is a vikshepa shakti, the projecting capacity, which means ignorance has to prevent you from seeing the rope. Ignorance has to obscure the rope. If ignorance is a non-existence, can a non-existence prevent you from seeing the rope? No. So ignorance is something. That something is present in deep sleep and becomes the basis for an experience, the experience we call sushupti avastha. All right, that when we say here prapancha upashama, the cessation of all experience, that means the experience of all three of these, which means not merely the absence of waking and dream state, but even the absence of the deep sleep state, which means we're talking about something more fundamental than the deep sleep state. Now, we've had this discussion before. You already know what it is that's more fundamental than the deep sleep state. You already know that all three of these alternate. Remember the movie theater metaphor. All three of these states of experience alternate in consciousness. Waking state arises in consciousness. Sleep state arises in consciousness. Dream state. Deep sleep state arises in consciousness. All three of these continually alternate in your experience. All three of these take place in consciousness. In the absence of all three of these, consciousness alone remains. Now, how can there be the absence of all three of these? Really speaking, you can't experience the absence of them. As long as you have a body and a mind, you're going to be in one of these states or the other. Until, so So you're going to continually go, if this is a whole movie theater analogy, you continue to watch first feature, second feature, blank screen, first feature, second feature, blank screen, representing the constant alternation of the three states of experience in our lives until we die. So, we're not dead yet. So we are now in one of the three states, Jagrat Avastha. We're always going to be in one of the avasthas. So if we're talking about what is beyond the three, what is independent of the three, let's be very clear that we're not talking about an experience. And this is an issue where modern Vedantins really go off. You can have the experience of waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. Can you have the experience of pure consciousness? If you followed our classes closely enough, you know the answer is no. In fact, it came up as a question before class. Consciousness can never be an object that you experience. The consciousness we're talking about is the experiencer and not something experienced. So let's be absolutely clear then that this Chaturtha Avastha, this fourth state, if we call it a state, is not an experience. We went through this before. At least maybe twice we went through this before, where we define this Chaturtha Avastha as the consciousness because of which the other three exist. That's what we mean. So prapancha upashama, that which is free from experience of the other three, which is the fourth chaturtha avastha, which is that consciousness because of which the other three exist, and that one, that chaturtha, that turiya, that fourth one is avyavaharya. Vyavaharya is that which you can relate to. You can have a relationship with it, which means, in technical terms, a subject-object relationship, a knower-known relationship. When we say avyavaharya, we mean you can't have a relationship with it, you can't have a subject-object relationship, you can't have a knower-known relationship. It's not known. It's not an object. It's the essence of you, the knowing subject. The essence of the knower, that consciousness. That consciousness is you, the knower. You can't have a relationship with yourself. The sun cannot illumine itself. You are that shining consciousness. You can't illumine yourself, just as the shining sun cannot illumine itself. Nor the sun need not illumine itself. It's self-shining. In the same way, your consciousness need not illumine yourself. You are swata siddha. You are self-evident, self-shining. That is avyavaharya, non-relational. And that fourth one, that consciousness, which is atma, is shivaha. Shiva here as an adjective means that which is pure, that which is holy, that which is auspicious. By extension, it is utterly free from suffering, shivaha, by extension. Utterly free from suffering, and it is finally advaitaha, non-dual. And we've seen before what advaita means, the absence of sajatiya, bheda, vijatiya, bheda, swagata, bheda. We're not going to go through all of that again. It's the only thing that exists when we're looking at the fourth mata. Remember, this is symbolism. If you ask, when will I experience that? You're not going to ask because you understand. But people who haven't properly studied this kind of material will definitely ask that question. What do we have to do to experience that? Well, the irony is that is consciousness. That consciousness is present right now in Jagrat Avastha. That consciousness will be present tonight when you're dreaming. That consciousness will be present tonight for you in deep sleep. It's not a matter of consciousness. Remember, all four of these are meant for meditation. not meant for experience. This is a very elaborate meditation that's being described here. So what we want to understand then is that the silence between repetitions of Om represents the consciousness which is independent of the three states of experience. Or we could say the consciousness because of which the other three states of experience exist. If we could somehow, and we can't, if we could somehow get rid of the three states of experience, if there was a switch on your brain, if there's a switch here that says alive and dead, you turn that switch to dead, then you're free from the three state, then you're free from the three, and consciousness alone exists. Problem is, who's going to turn the switch back on? So far, we don't know how to reverse death. So that's not the point. The point I'm making is, I think you understand, this is not a matter of experience. This is symbolism meant for a meditation. A meditation which is supposed to enhance our understanding of the reality of who we are. That's our goal. And we'll see that meditation in a few moments. All right. So that's the first statement of this mantra. The next statement, evam omkaraha atma eva. Evam, thus, in this way, omkaraha, the syllable om, is atma eva. The syllable om represents atma indeed. When we say represents atma, represents Satchidananda Atma, or a little bit more complex than that, right? It represents, all of these are names for Atma. Vaishwanara is a name for Atma. Taijasa is a name for Atma. Prajna is a name for Atma. Then what name shall we use here for the fourth state? Well, the only name we really can use is Atma. The difference being is Vaishvanara is Atma with reference to waking state experiences. Taijasa is Atma with reference to. With reference to means accompanied by. Accompanied by dream state. Prajna is Atma accompanied by or with reference to the deep sleep state. Atma is consciousness with reference to nothing. Avyavahariyaha. So, Omkara Atma Eva. Omkara represents not only Satchidananda Atma, but Omkara with this symbolism represents Vaishvanara, Taijasa, Prajna, and Atma. This is a symbolism to be used in meditation. That's why the text says Omkara Eva. Atma Eva. Now, we come to the conclusion of our text. Samvishati Atmana Atmanam Ya Evam Veda. Yaha Evam Veda. One who understands thus, notice that the prior three verses ended with those very same words. One who understands thus, and then we saw that the final statement of each verse was the pala, the fruits or benefits of that teaching. So, yaha evam veda, one who understands thus, what do you get? What is the benefit from that understanding? Here he says, samvishati, one enters, give you the literal meaning first, but then we have to go further. Samvishati, one enters, atmanam, oneself, or atma, the amatra, one enters atma, atmana, by oneself. One enters oneself by oneself. One enters atma by means of atma. What in the world does that mean? How do you enter atma by means of atma? So the use of the word samvishati, to enter, is a figurative expression. We'll see Shankara's explanation of it in just a moment. But it's figurative. There's no literal entering. How do you enter into consciousness? You already are that consciousness. Then there's no entering. In fact, there's no, with reference to Satchidananda Atma, not only is there no entering, there's no enlightenment. Atma, this sounds strange, but it's so true. Atma cannot become enlightened. Sorry. So wait a minute. True, Atma cannot become enlightened because Atma was never in bondage in the first place. Only one in bondage can become freed from bondage, can become enlightened. Atma never got caught up in a state of bondage. Atma is eternally free. All of these teachings are not for the sake of Atma, they're for the sake of Jiva, you, the one who's listening. All right, enough said. So let's see Shankara's explanation. There's a few things Shankara says at the end of this text, which is very helpful and quite profound in some cases. First of all, that idea of samvishati, to enter. So how we know the entry is figurative, but then there must be some kind of entry. And Shankara gives a very, very nice interpretation of this. He says, Nahi raju sarpayoho viveke rajvam pravishtaha sarpaha. So when, with regard to the raju sarpa, the rope snake, he says, when you distinguish what it really is, when you distinguish that it's not a snake, it's really a rope, what happens to the snake? So Shishankara says, the snake enters the rope. Samvishati is correct. Where does the snake go? It's absolutely correct because the snake came from the rope, did it not? The snake came from the rope. The snake goes back to the rope. The snake emerged from the rope. The snake returns or merges into the rope. Brilliant. This is Shankara's explanation. So what that means from our standpoint, Jagrat Avastha emerges from consciousness. When it emerges from consciousness, you take it as being something other than consciousness. When a snake emerges from the rope, you take the snake as being an independently existing thing. When Jagrat Avastha arises from your consciousness, when this very experience, this will be less philosophical, more experiential, when this experience that we're having right now emerges from consciousness, you take this experience, along with the room around us, all the people in the room, Swami Tadatmananda, you attribute to all of these things, you attribute to them reality. There's a room, there are chairs, there are so many students, there's a Swami up on a stage. All of these are individual realities because they seem to have emerged from consciousness. But with this wisdom, ya evam veda, the text says, when you really get it, when you get the complete fruits of these teachings, you realize that none of this is separate from consciousness. The room, the chairs, the students, the Swami are nothing but manifestations of consciousness. With this understanding, they, figuratively speaking, return to consciousness. Not that the experience goes away, but it's a shift in your understanding. So just as the snake returns to the rope In the same way, Jagrat Avastha as a separate reality disappears. It returns to consciousness. Similarly for Swapna Avastha, dreams. Dreams appear to emerge from consciousness. With the help of this wisdom, you understand that even while the dream is present, it's nothing but consciousness. It's not a separate reality. And with that understanding, that dream experience returns to consciousness. When I say returns, it's not in terms of experience. It's in terms of understanding. So right now, this waking state experience, if you were enlightened, this experience would have returned to consciousness. It doesn't mean that this experience will go away. It means that you'll understand that whatever you're experiencing is nothing but consciousness with names and forms, consciousness with nama rupa. In that way, you have cognitively returned this Jagrat Avastha to consciousness. In terms of understanding, in terms of wisdom, this Jagrat Avastha returns to consciousness, Swapna Avastha returns to consciousness, Sushupti Avastha returns to consciousness. There's only consciousness. Advaitam Shivam. Shivaha Advaitaha, our text says. All right. Shankara continues. Buddhi samskarat punaha purvavat tad viveki nam uttasyati. Na, and the na has to go down. Na uttasyati. When the snake returns to the rope, does it come back? So you're walking down that alley. You see this, you almost step on this snake, you back up, and after squinting your eyes and blinking for a while, you figure out that it's not a snake at all, it's just a rope. And with that recognition, the snake returns to the rope. Will the snake reemerge? Na uttasyati, it will not return purvavat like it was before. Buddhi samskarat, even though there's a lot of snake samskara in your mind, even though there's a lot of snakeness in your mind. You know what a snake is, you're afraid of snakes, you think of snakes. So there's a snake samskara up here in your mind. But even that being so, the snake will not return in that dark alley once you recognize that it's a rope. And here's a problem. In this class, I would venture to say that all of you, or nearly all of you, have understood and discovered what we're talking about, which means, does Jagrat Avastha truly returns to consciousness? Right here and now, the only thing present is consciousness. There's no object here independent of consciousness. There's only consciousness. Shivaha Advaitaha. Suppose you get it. Wonderful. When you're driving home, is that your perspective? What happens, and this is a very common experience, that in a class like this, especially when we're discussing a very profound text, you'll get glimpses. You'll get it. And when you get it, it's pretty amazing to realize there's no objects here whatsoever. After all, there's nothing out there. Whatever I'm experiencing is in here, in my mind. And whatever is in my mind is nothing but consciousness. You get it until you walk out the door. So there's something different. Buddhi samskarat, Sri Shankara says, that depending on the condition of your intellect, the snake didn't return, but for many of us, duality does return. There's a difference. When you see the snake, just play with that. Suppose you went down that same alley the next day. It's possible you might see the snake just for half a second, but immediately you'd remember, oh, I remember there was a rope here. So immediately. And the third day you went down that alley, even that wouldn't come. You would just know it's only rope. But when it comes to understanding that all this is nothing but Chaitanya Atma, that there is no physical object out there at all, there is only consciousness in your own mind, assuming different forms and names. This recognition is very different than the recognition of the rope. It's not so firm. It comes in glimpses. It comes and goes, which means there's a difference. And Shankara addresses that in his final statement here. He says, Manda madhyama dhyam tu, but, nice way to introduce it, but, manda madhyama dhyam, but for those whose minds are manda, weak, or madhyama, in the middle, for those, this teaching is not enough. This teaching that all this is not a bunch of physical objects, all this is nothing but consciousness, says for those whose minds are weak or middling, these teachings are not enough. For such people who are pratipanna sadhaka bhavanam, for such people who are committed to a process of spiritual growth, sanmarga gaminam, for such people who are on a path, the path that leads to truth, sannyasinam, for those people who are sannyasis, this is Sri Shankara. All of Shankara's students were sannyasis. So what to say? So Shankara just assumes that whoever is going to be studying a text like this should be a sannyasi. So consider you're all honorary sannyasis. That's the idea. For such people, he says, matranam paranam cha klipta samanya vidam. For such people who have an understanding, samanya vidam, a general understanding of this symbolism. Remember our context. If you're already enlightened, you don't need to do anything. But if you are manda or madhyama dhyam, for those whose minds are low or middle, then you can still, even if you don't get it with a capital I, even if you don't get it, you can still get the symbolism. You can still get the matras and the paras. Matranam paranam cha klipta samanya vidam. If klipta, projected. Symbolism, Shankara admits that this is all symbolism. So if you get this symbolism, then what? Yatavat upasyamanaha, to the extent that you meditate, making use of the symbolism, Omkaraha Brahma Pratipattaye, meditation on Om can produce knowledge of Brahman. You may not have gotten it with a capital I, but you have gotten the symbolism. If you meditate on this symbolism, that meditation can lead you to that ultimate discovery. Why? Alambani bhavati. Because Om becomes alambani bhavati. Om becomes an alambana. Om becomes the object of meditation, an object of meditation which then can lead you to make this discovery, and make this discovery in such a way where it's not just glimpses or little insights that come and go, but make this wisdom firm. And that's the nature of an enlightened person, as we will be seeing in our Bhagavad Gita classes, that sthita prajna, the one whose wisdom is firm, the one who doesn't get it in little glimpses, but the one who's deeply established in this. So Shankara concludes the text by saying that if you haven't gotten it with a capital I, here you have understood the symbolism. And Shankara says, for those who are on a path of spiritual growth, they can continue to meditate on Omkara using this symbolism, and thereby Brahmapattaye, he says it's for the sake of Brahmapratipatti, for the sake of gaining understanding of Brahman, the reality of the universe, which is the reality of you. So Shankara ends then by pointing to the necessity of meditation on Om, Omkara Upasana, which is what really the whole text is focused on. And certainly this last part of the text is certainly introducing this Omkara Upasana. So let's talk about, in pragmatic terms, how to do this meditation, Omkara Upasana. The obvious part is you use Om, but this Upasana is really a knitted dhyasana, a kind of contemplation. It's something that you have to think about. Many times we use different meditation techniques to make our minds silent or to quiet our minds. This is not one of these techniques. This is a meditation technique where you're supposed to think. What are you supposed to think? You have to apply this symbolism. So when you chant Om, you have to reflect. When I started chanting Om, that's like the waking state. As I was chanting Om in the middle, that's like the dream state. When I concluded that's like resolution in deep sleep. And then Om, followed by silence. In the silence, there's no ma. In the silence, there's only consciousness. If the mind is silent, the only thing present is consciousness. You actually have to think about this while you're chanting Om. Now, while you're chanting Om doesn't mean doing two things at the same time. It does not mean, oh, and while you're chanting, oh, you're thinking. No. Here's how it works. You chant Om, and then you reflect on the experience of chanting Om. Puja Swami Dayananda, my guru, made it very clear. Experience itself is dumb. His exact words, experience is dumb. In order to learn from experience, we have to analyze the experience. So every time you chant Om, it's an experience. After the experience is over, think about the experience. That's how it works. That's how Omkara Upasana works. You chant Om, then you think. After you're done chanting Om, then you reflect on what's just transpired. Chanting Om represents all experience, waking, dream, and deep sleep. The silence after chanting Om represents that prapancha upashama, the silence, which means the pure consciousness which remains in the absence of all experience. Suppose you chant Om and then think, wow, look at that. Om. And you think that Om just went by, just like all experiences go by. Om. And then when the experiences are gone, then silence alone remains. Om. That silence represents the consciousness which is always present. The consciousness which is present when I'm chanting a, the consciousness which is present when I'm chanting u, the consciousness which is present when I'm chanting ma, Om. The consciousness which is present in Jagrat, the consciousness which is present in Swapna, the consciousness which is present in Sushupti, Om. You getting it now? So the way the meditation works, chant, which is an experience, you chant Om, and then reflect. Chant, reflect. Chant, reflect. We're going to chant with a raga, which is like a three-part. You're going to actually chant Om three times with a short pause after each one. But after the third time, there's going to be a long pause. So be Om, pause, Om, pause, Om, long pause. And the reason for the long pause is so that you can reflect more. Reflecting on your experience based on the symbolism that we've just seen. So with this brief introduction, we'll just, maybe for about 20 minutes, we'll try this Omkara Upasana. And I think we'll turn down the lights for this meditation. Is that okay? Maybe leave my light on so it doesn't get too dark. That's good. All right. This is meditation, so we want to prepare ourselves properly for meditation. Sit with your backs fairly erect. Tuck your tailbones back. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Get settled down. Could spend a few minutes preparing ourselves for meditation, but we don't have too much time, so I'm going to show you the technique. The technique is powerful enough that it'll quickly make our minds very focused and very concentrated. It's reciting Om with a particular raga. We'll learn that raga in just a moment. We'll start just by chanting Om together three times on this note, fairly softly. Take an extra long pause, a short pause after the first two, and a long pause after the final one. That long pause will be especially helpful for you to reflect on your experience applying the symbolism that we've discussed. Let us begin. Deep breath. Thank you.
Thank you.
chant silently in your mind. Oh. last time. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Tat Sat. You can stretch out your limbs. Can we have the room lights back on, please? There is no right or wrong way to do this kind of upasana. It's rather an opportunity for exploration using Om and its symbolism to help that process of exploration. Just to give you some ideas, each Om can represent a particular experience. So you chant Om to three times, as three experiences come and go, consciousness remains. Each Om can represent a day. 3 days come and go, consciousness remains. Each Om can represent the cycle of waking, dream, sleep. After each cycle of waking, dream, sleep, consciousness remains. And of course, that consciousness remains is what you reflect upon in the interval following. And one thing you might reflect on is how even during the Om, consciousness remains. Consciousness is present before the Om. Consciousness is present during the Auma. Consciousness is present afterwards. Consciousness remains unchanged. Each Om can represent a lifetime, lifetime after lifetime, come and go. In the silence, you recognize the consciousness that remains. So each Om, the symbolism that you, the way in which you apply the symbolism is entirely up to you. I've given you several ideas. All of the symbolism we've discussed helps you understand how to apply it. And then the way the meditation works is after you chant Om, give yourself some time to reflect. What does this mean? What does this mean in terms of my experience right now? in that silence, am I indeed that unchanging, unborn, uncreated consciousness? You ask yourself that question, and in the silence, let the silence give you the answer. This is how Omkara Upasana can be performed. But as I said, there's no one way to do it. If you begin with a sense of experimentation and exploration, you might find it very, very helpful. And this brings us to the end of our text, Mandukya Upanishad. This is also the third of the Upanishads that we've studied. We started with Isha Upanishad, then studied Kaivalya Upanishad. We've just finished Mandukya. And I've chosen one more text, a little bit off the beaten track. The first three texts that we've taken are very frequently taught. The fourth Upanishad, which we're going to, and last Upanishad that we'll study, is not taught as frequently, but its meaning is actually very easy to follow. It'll be much less obscure than some of the texts we've seen. And it's very profound in its unfoldment. It's known as Amrita Bindu Upanishad. It's already posted to our website. So if you like, before you come to class next time, you can print yourself a copy of the slides, and then we'll proceed with our study of Amrita Bindu in our next class. Yeah. We'll end with our prayers.